Hey, it's Cindy Howes and Lizzie Noh from the podcast Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians.
Basic Folk is truly changing the game with our well-researched deep dives that aim to empower the listener while fostering the folk community.
I basically am writing worship music for youth group rejects.
Maternal regrets and maternal guilt are universal.
I try to make things that are beautiful and that are made with like a purity of intention.
You can listen to Basic Folk on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or at basicfolk.com.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
That's always amazed me, like even someone like Bruce or Dylan. Mm-hmm. Dylan, I've seen Dylan a few times, and you know, not to knock Dylan, but you can't always understand his lyrics anyway, so I think if he messes up, I wouldn't even know. But Bruce, I know the, you know, and always right. Amaze me when an artist can remember. Like, how do you remember so many words to so that just...
If you start thinking about it, that's when you mess up.
Yeah, I've heard like, that. I've heard you can't think. You just got to roll. Just go.
As soon as you start thinking about it.
Hey, everybody. This is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends. They love it.
Yeah, writers are an interesting thing because you want what you want, but you also don't want to overdo it.
Yeah, and we love it when, like, the band Shenandoah, they put funny stuff in there.
Like what?
A purple stuffed zebra. And then Exile, they wanted a picture of Marilyn Monroe's centerfold from Playboy from the 50s, like the first. Yeah, they wanted that. And then we've had people want like a framed copy of the Texas Independence, stuff like, you know, just they'll hide it in there to see if you're, and we always do it just for the.
That's so fun.
We had to paint the zebra purple because we couldn't find a black zebra, but white zebra, but we had to paint it.
And yeah.
They just, so we go way out of our way to do that. Just it freaks them out and they have fun.
Do you care if that's on there? If
no,
we started,
it's just fun.
I mean, I was like, that's such a fun.
Mary Chapin Carpenter wanted, one red beach towel, and she wanted one copy of the New York Times. Well, no one in New Braunfels has the New York Times, nor do they even subscribe to it, except the library. And so the library said, well, it's a Sunday show, and the Sunday paper is going to be out in front. You're welcome to come down here at 6 o'clock and try to find it. And so I did, and it was gone already. Someone had already taken it.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're like, oh, crap, you know, she's going to be really pissed. So she gets there and I tell her, hey, we got, you know, the red beach towel, but we don't have the, and she goes, is that still in there? And I said, yeah. And she goes, I read it online. I don't know why it's still in there. So we have that happen a lot too, where the artist never sees the writer except for, you know, and, but we always make a point to try to find everything. Just, it's a challenge.
Yeah. We always, I mean, ours is simple. It's like some water, some beer.
Yeah. We wine. Always make sure there's a lot of snacks, a lot of candy, a lot of fruit, a lot of juice, you know, for the healthier people. And then we always do coffee and throat coat and honey and lemon and all that.
That is way above and beyond.
Yeah, we do all that. So.
Okay, so Dale is now like, what is your official title at the Brontex?
You know, I don't know.
We should create one.
I used to do the booking of the bands, but then I started, during COVID, I started trying to retire because I got old. And so I kind of do the production backstage, production, to handle everything that happens backstage.
Cool. That's so fun because you get to see all these people.
Yeah, load in, load out, all the hospitality, the showrunner, getting the bus driver to and from the hotel, getting the bands there, you know, taking
the
food orders, what they want to eat, after show food, all that.
And then last time I was in there, you were setting up for a ballet.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit theater, so they do rentals. We have a lot of ballet companies that come in and like do the Nutcracker and Frozen, you know, Little Mermaid, all that kind of stuff. So being a nonprofit, you have to kind of cater to children, too, because that's a big part of your grant writing is to get kids involved. Like HEB will give you a grant if you do something involving children. So we try to do that, too. We did like Puppy Pals last year. We a bunch of dogs come in.
That's why they haven't given me a grant.
Yeah.
I'm not made for children.
Yeah. So it's fun. I mean, I started doing it in 2010, I guess, something like that. I started volunteering there in 2003. and I became a board member in 2005, and then I got off the board in 2010 and took a full-time job of booking the bands. And then I was 62 right at COVID time, and I was already wanting to slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
And my mom had gotten real sick. She's still, you know, so we hired Risa Miller to come in and help me. And then COVID hit, and we didn't have nothing to do. So when COVID started back, when we started back up again, we were closed for 15 months.
Oh my gosh.
And I think we rescheduled maybe 30 or 40 shows three times because you didn't know how long it would last. So you'd move them back 90 days and then move them back 90 days and then move. And as you know, routing is a big deal. So when we moved a show, all of our routing partners had to move the show, and then maybe that wouldn't fit. And so it was very challenging times for us.
What's your favorite shows that have been there? I got to see Rodney Crowell there. Me and Paul got to see Rodney Crowell
there. Right. Everybody always thinks, oh man, you have the coolest job. And to be totally honest, I haven't really seen a show there in a long time. One of my favorite acts is Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Yeah.
And we got them there. And that's one of them I actually went out and sat and watched. And Sean McConnell, of course.
Ugh.
And his show was amazing. And Raul Malo comes quite often. And so I always try to make a point to go out and watch some of that. Marty Stewart comes every year. And that's one I like to try to watch. But usually when they're on stage, we're cleaning the dressing room. We're taking out the trash. We're getting ready for them to come off stage. If they're going to go out front and do a meet and greet, we're getting the officers back there ready to take them out front. So, you know, just because the show started, we're still doing stuff.
Yeah.
And then lately we've had to be really – we're trying to be really secure there. So we're, like, making sure the doors are locked and we have an officer patrolling the parking lot, because nowadays you just never know. You just have to be – super, super safe.
I love that, because I'll leave my purse in the green room and stuff, and I'm like, I would rather have it on stage or something. You never know who's going to be able to go back
there. We make a real big point of if they have a road manager, we clear it with them. Like, hey, do you mind while you're on stage if we come in and clean the dressing room? Or if you don't, we won't. You know,
That's so nice.
We lock it, give them a key if they want. So whatever they want, it's up to them. It's their show. So
that's so great.
It's mostly volunteer work. So all of our backstage hospitality crew are all volunteers. So they usually cook homemade cookies or cake or something for them. And we...
Those are the people that I get mad at, because you can't resist a homemade
cookie.
Right.
So, you know, yeah.
Come on.
But I like to... I'll probably go out and watch John Cafferty just because he hasn't ever been here to Texas. And, you know, the show's, you know, not selling real well, but... he's got a great band, so I'll go out and watch some of that.
When do you have time to write your column? Dale writes a music column, and I feel spoiled. This is the first thing, is first things first. Thank you for I get it 2 days early before everyone else. Not just me, but of course.
A lot of my friends and out-of-town people, I have a lot of friends. I grew up in Victoria, so I have a lot of friends and family that live out of town, and they don't subscribe to the paper, so I email it to them. And then, you know, so I started just sending PDFs out, and the list just kind of kept growing, and someone's like, hey, can you send it to me? And so it's tough. You know, I've interviewed you before, and I know how you got in the music business. Sometimes you get into jobs by accident. I always wanted to be a writer, but when I was trying to write back in the 70s, they weren't paying. As you know about musicians, sometimes people don't, they want you to do it for free.
Right.
Everything's free, you know. And so when I wanted to write, minimum wage was $2.36 an hour. That's
oh, Lord.
So when I interviewed for this job at the Victoria Advocate to write, it paid $1.70 an hour. So I couldn't afford to be a writer. So I dropped out of college and took a job at a construction company that started me at $5 an hour. So I kind of gave up on being a writer. And then accidentally, a friend of mine who... delivered papers for in the morning, throw the papers out. He said, hey, I saw on the bulletin board they're looking for a music writer. So I went and talked to him, and they said, well, we pay $10 a week, you know. And so I'm like, well, okay. And I'd never written anything about it, about music. I went to concerts, and I'm always that kid that's had the little piece of paper writing down the set list and writing down notes, and people would say, who are you writing for? And I wasn't writing for anyone. I was just doing it for a hobby. And so they gave me a chance, and this was back in the day of 1976. There was no internet. There was none of that. So you had to type it on a typewriter and physically drive it to the paper and give it to them. So I wrote a lot of columns that they wouldn't publish because they were so bad. And finally, in May of 77, they published my first column. And I've never missed a week since.
Every week since 1977. Yep. That is incredible.
Well, I take that back. When I moved to New Braunfels, I gave up the Victoria paper job, and I thought, you know, I'm burned out. I've been doing it for like 25 years, and every week, and you know, like you write a song. You told me you were in a songwriting thing. You have to do. It becomes a hobby, becomes work, and then you're like, damn, I'd rather do this than that. So, I moved here, and gave up my job at the Advocate in Victoria, and so for a week or so, I didn't have a column. So I got called for jury duty, and the lady sitting next to me was the editor of the Herald. And we were waiting to see if we were going to get picked or not. And she said, oh, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I work at this construction company. And she said, well, I work at the newspaper. And I said, oh, I used to write for the newspaper. And, oh, what'd you do? And I said, oh, I wrote a music column. Oh, we're looking for someone to write a music column. Do you want to write a music column for us? And so I'm like, okay. So it kind of started all over again. So,
oh, my gosh. That's
so
great.
So from 94, 95, I guess it was, till now, I've had one every week.
Write the music column. Well, I just got summoned again for jury duty. I've already done it. It just came again. And so maybe I'll be sitting by someone with like $1 million who wants to give me like a record deal for $1 million and doesn't want their money back. I'm trying to find that guy.
It's hard because, like, I usually try to write it every Sunday, but if I work on a Saturday, then I only have one day off, and it takes a long time to write because the concert, looking to see who's playing where, that takes a long time. Yeah. A lot of venues just aren't really proactive of putting on their website or on Facebook who's playing where or what, and so it takes me about 8 hours to do the concert calendar, and then I'm usually every Monday morning I get up and then write the column.
Mm-hmm. That is so incredible, but it is such a good one-stop shop for where everyone's playing.
And I try to. And I wished a lot of venues were a little bit better at keeping their stuff. I have to send out about 15 to 20 texts every Sunday, and then I have to send out about 4 or 5 Facebook messages and then at least a dozen emails. Just to get them to reply.
To get that calendar.
Now, you know, like Green Hall and Riley's Tavern and anybody in Green Grove, any of those people, you know, they're update all the time. But some of the, you know, some of the smaller venues, the music is maybe not their prime source of income. So that's kind of secondary. So they're like, oh, yeah, I need to update that. Or especially if there's a month change, like this week was insane because nobody had updated to February yet.
Right.
So every time there's an end of the month week, I'm like, okay, here we
get it together. That's so interesting. Wow, there might be a whole business model for somebody out there who has some extra time that wants to do that for some venues, because that would be incredible. I wore all my Green Hall merch today.
Yeah.
They posted, they were like, we need a model for our website, and you know, they're like, we'll give you $100 or whatever. And I raised my hand on their comments, and they were like, okay. Like, I was kind of kidding, and then they really let me do it. So I'm like modeling
Green
all the
Hall
Green Hall
and Hall I
merch.
Go. I met my wife there. We met at a Joe Ely concert. She used to book the bands at Green Hall.
That's right.
And she did that for a long time. She booked the paid shows, and then Tracy Ferguson books the free shows. And so my wife worked straight for Pat Molak. She worked for him.
That's awesome.
I mean, he did the booking, but she did like the contracts and got everything together and made the offers. And I was in Victoria, and she and I had both gone through a divorce. And so I had to call Green Hall to get on the guest list to review shows. And so she was the person I had to talk to.
Oh, my gosh.
So we became friends on the phone before we ever met. So we were friends. We were, I'd call her, hey, I want to come see, you know, whoever. And she's like, okay, I'll put you on the guest list. And so then one day I said, well, I'm coming up to see Joe Ely. And she goes, oh, I love Joe Ely. And I'm like, are you going to be at the show? And she's like, you know, maybe I will. Because she had, at that point, she was like a lot of people. You get burned out of going to shows every day, mm-hmm. you know. And she's like, okay. And we had never met. So we met and hung out, drank some beer, and just kind of started talking. And then we, I think we went on a couple of dates, and then we started dating. And then we, here we are, 2005. We were together in like 2000, I guess. And then we got married in 2005 and been together ever since. So.
And you guys love, you guys go to concerts together. That's your thing. You have been to the, some of the coolest concerts, but some of them, so many, like, how many times have you seen?
32 times for Bruce. But he's kind of my guy, because I, yes. back in 75, everybody was, you know, you had to have 8-track tape and vinyl back then. And so he was the first album I bought on 8-track tape. And none of my high school friends had ever heard of him. And so I'm like, you got to hear this. You got to hear Jungle Land. You've got to hear Born to. And they're like, eh, we're listening to Skinner and BTO and Bad Company and Frampton Comes Alive and all that stuff. And I'm like, no, you've got to listen to this guy, you know. And so I couldn't convert my buddies. And so I got to go to Austin and see him back then. And I've seen him, I think, on every tour. I didn't, a couple of his acoustic tours I missed. And when the E Street Band, when they got rid of them for those, that one tour where he didn't have them with him, he had another band, I kind of didn't go to that because I was such, you know, a fan of the band too. The E Street Band was like,
right.
They were just as important as I thought he was, you know. So I kind of like, I'm not going to that show. But I've been, and this last one in Austin, everybody's giving me a hard time about it because it's the first time I've ever kind of written a little bit less than glowing reviews about it, because it was a phenomenal concert, but it was the first time in his entire career that he quit changing the set list every night. That's the thing that drew us to Bruce.
Right, because you never knew what was...
You know, back in 84, I went to Rain on the Scarecrow tour of Mellencamp's, and I ended up seeing him in Dallas, Houston, and Austin, and they were three nights in a row. And even the dialogue between his songs was identical. It was like a snapshot of... It was like he cut and pasted. But when you went to see Bruce, you had no idea what he was going to play next. I mean, he would just play anything, and people would yell stuff out, and he'd read the crowd, and if he thought he had too many slow songs, he'd throw in something. And so you might go see him in Austin and Houston, and they'd be totally different shows.
Yeah, master performer for sure.
So once I saw that, I'm like, and then everybody else wasn't doing that. You know, I went to see Sammy Hagar one night and Bruce the next night, and it was Hagar was amazing and energetic, but it was the exact same show every night, and Bruce did. And I always respected that. And like nowadays when an artist comes to the theater, like let's say Neil McCoy is a good example, he doesn't use a set list. He never tells the band what he's going to play.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm not even a musician, but I like that.
That
like,
is very cool. That is
and
very
interesting. I saw your show at Green Hall, and I loved your pacing of your show. You're really good at putting like a really fast rocker, and then you'll go, you know, you pace your show well. Bruce does that. He has that ability to pace a show. And to me, that's the model of a good artist, that you can pace a show and you can read a crowd and you can know, okay, this is what I need.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct to garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you. I wouldn't say I'm great at it, but I do try, because we had one set there for a while where I just felt the whole crowd lull in the middle of it or something, and you have to be able to reevaluate. You
and
know?
You have a good band that can change. Yeah. You can turn around and say, hey, this, you know, and maybe put something else in. And
I've been really lucky. I've had a lot of great band members and really good band right now.
Right.
So we haven't played in a month, and we're playing on Saturday. I'm like, okay, guys, it's time to knock off the rust. Do you still remember these songs? We'll find out.
Do you ever go listen to your own stuff to remember it?
No, not usually. I mean, I've still been playing this whole month, so I don't really, but you know, we put a Charlie Robinson song in our in our
Which
set.
Which one are you doing?
We've been doing New Year's Day because like, and then I did the Charlie tribute in
Steamboat.
Key West and Steamboat, and I did New Year's Day, and I for some reason I start thinking about I started in Steamboat thinking when I was singing it. This is the last time I sang with Charlie was on that stage in Steamboat.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't remember and I had to start. Once I started over and like I was like, I just need a minute to get my life together.
Right.
So I mess up, I think, covers more than my own stuff. I don't know. It just
That's always
nature.
Amazed me, like even someone like Bruce or Dylan. Mm-hmm. Dylan, I've seen Dylan a few times, and you know, not to knock Dylan, but you can't always understand his lyrics anyway. So I think if he messes up, I wouldn't even know. But Bruce, I know the, you know, and I always amaze me when an artist can remember, like, how do you remember so many words to so that just.
If you start thinking about it, that's when you mess up.
Yeah, I've heard like, that. I've heard you can't think. You just got to roll. Just go.
As soon as you start thinking about it. But like the tribute shows are what makes me nervous. I did a Buffett one, and then I did the Reckless Kelly tribute in Steamboat. And that was like maybe one of the most nervous I've been in my life. And I missed a bar chord right in front of Dave Abeda, like the greatest, one of the greatest guitar players of our time. And I was like, please don't. I just missed one chord. It was pretty fast, but I was nervous, you know. It's just gotten to my hands.
I was surprised that Reckless says they're going to quit. I mean, do you really think they are?
I'm hoping it's like a George Strait moment where they
come back. Yeah.
I think they're still going to do all the cool stuff. You know,
they did we were doing tribute shows at the Brontex, and we were trying to make them fun. Like we were telling way back in 2012, we would call local bands and say, look, we don't want it to be a cheesy impersonation show. We just want you to come down and play the songs of a band or an artist that really inspired you when you were starting out.
Oh.
Like, and so,
we had,
you know, Tom Gillum did Creedence, and Jason Eadie did Merle Haggard, and all these different people just started. And one day Willie Braun called and said, "Hey, I'm gonna come down and do
Tom Petty."
And I said, "Willie, we can't pay you what you want." I mean, they were getting, you know, a lot more than we were paying. I think we were paying like $1,500 to do a tribute show back then, and we were only charging $5 at the door. It was just something fun to do. And he goes, no, I want to do it because I want to get my band, we need to practice, and I want to get my band tight again because we're getting a little sloppy. And, man, they came down and just killed it. And he even told me, he said, man, every show after that for like 6 months, we were spot on because we worked hard at it.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to get him to come do a Springsteen one, but he hasn't bet on that yet, but.
I love that you kind of have this bridge between like you love Springsteen, you love that, yes, like, but you also love the Texas artist, like, and you also with your column you can like bridge all the different genres and eras, like you know so many people and you have met so many people and seen so many shows, and it's just very cool.
Well, I you know, when I came from Victoria didn't have there's nothing harder than writing a music column when there's no music. And COVID proved that. I mean, it was hard to write. But Victoria didn't have a vibrant music scene. They just didn't. We had to rely on the traditional country radio station that bringing in the Tracy Lawrences and the Tracy Byrds and the whatever, and Doug Stone and Joe Diffie's. And so I could write about that when they were coming. But we didn't have clubs there that were doing music like here. Mm-hmm. So it was hard. So I found myself writing more about maybe one paragraph about local, one about Texas, and then one about the country, like who, a bigger star, Janet Jackson's own tour, let's write, you know, whatever. But when I came here, it was like, whoa, this is, you know, there's music here. And I came at a really good time because I came right when... When I came to town, KNBT was playing classic country, and I needed a place to live. I was looking for an apartment, and my wife was good friends with Mattson Rayner, and she said, hey, Mattson's looking for a roommate, and I never met him. And I went to the station, and he's doing his Crossroads Americana, and he's like, I got a room upstairs, I got a house, and he said, I need a roommate, and I said, okay, and he said, let's go look at it, and I'm like, you're on the air right now. Like, and he goes, he flips a switch and he puts it to automatic, and we get in my car and we go out to his house, and it's a nice home. And he said, you can have the whole upstairs. So I was his roommate. And so he had just started changing the station and playing Americana. And like, almost every night I'd look out my window and there'd be Charlie or Wade or Cody or someone out back, and they're all hanging around out back and they've got a guitar. And so I got to be there before they even were anybody. Like, they were still playing open mic nights.
Oh, my gosh. How fun.
And then I got to be there when he started changing it to Americana. I was still his roommate when they got voted the number one Americana station in America when the Americana thing started. So just by being in the right place at the right time, I got to meet a lot of artists that, you know, Randy was still, I think, living above the Phoenix Saloon in that little apartment. He was doing open mics at Tavern in the Green. Pat Green, I'd go see him at places and no one would show up. They had no idea who he was. So I was in the right place at the right time.
You got to see it, and you got to see it grow, and
right.
And now you're helping us. I'm a 10-year newbie, but still a newbie compared to those old geezers out there. Just kidding, Wade and Randy. I'm joking. And now we all live here. Can you believe that this?
It's a different town now, though.
Yeah, I hear that. And they're trying. We cannot be priced out of New Braunfels.
Right. It's getting really. You know, when I moved here, Common Street stopped at Green Road. It didn't go past.
Oh, wow.
A lot more pasture land. 46 to Seguin was maybe one red light. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
And I know the secret's out, they say, and everybody wants to move. You know, like Wimberley went through a growth spurt. Bernie's going through it. All of the hill country is. And I get it. Everybody wants to live here. I did, too. I moved here, too. But I think the city maybe didn't do as well of letting the infrastructure keep up with the growth. It went too fast. And, you know, it's hard to even go out for breakfast in this town. It's waiting list everywhere.
Paul and I joke about that all the time. We're like, we should just open a brunch place because you cannot get in anywhere. But we should we have one? New Braunfels is terrible. Don't move here.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Put it on the water tower.
Yeah.
Do not move here.
Do not move. Well, there is a billboard right here by the railroad tracks, and it's for rent, and it's this tiny billboard. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
And we called and asked how much it was, and we were like, we should just get a bunch of our friends to go in with us, even though we moved here too five years ago. So I don't have.
It's a tough call. I mean, it really is. It's like I get it. Everybody wants to live here, but the town is going through some serious growing pains right now.
Yeah, so. I understand. Who are some of the coolest people that you've met, or like artists that you've met? That you love, or any artist, or you just have so many, and it's so easy to talk to you. That time has already like flown by.
No, I don't want to overstate.
No, we have a few more.
I have a couple of funny stories.
Yeah.
I was at Walmart in Victoria, and they had this guy there to sign autographs, and no one was at his table, and I felt really bad, and I wasn't there to see him, and I was there to get something for my car or something, and I walk by and it's Garth Brooks, and he's sitting there and no one is coming up to see him.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
He's got a cassette there, his first album, and I felt really sorry for him. So I go over and I'm like, hey, you know, I'll buy your cassette, you know. And so I gave him $10, and I think it was like $8, and I gave him 10, and he didn't have change. I just said, you know, keep it. And so I wanted him to sign it. So he opened up the cassette and he folded all out the little insert, and he goes, I said, well, what's your next single? And I'd heard Much Too Young, but he said, well, my next single is going to be The Dance, and I really hope that it does something for me.
Oh, my gosh.
So he signs my cassette, and I go and shop, and I can remember this like it was yesterday. There's this lady walks by, and they didn't have water or anything for him. And he asked the Walmart lady, you know, can I have some water? And she looks at him like, who are you? And so she goes to the grocery aisle and gets this gallon jug of water and just sets it down, and he, thank you, ma'am, and he peels the top and drinks out. And so I just thought, man, they're being really rough on this guy. So I go and do my shopping, and I come back, and he's still sitting there. And I said, you know, he was playing down the street at the KC Hall, and I said, you know, do you need a ride? And he goes, well, I think my road manager forgot about me. He said he was supposed to take the band, and they were in a van. They didn't have a bus. They were in a van. So I said, well, man, I live on my way home, I go right by there. Do you want to ride? And he's like, sure. And no cell phones back then. So I said, he said, well, what if we miss him? I said, no, they have to come this way to get you. So just if we see your van, we'll just stop. So on the way there, he goes, well, they probably ate dinner, and I said, well, do you want something to eat? And he goes, oh, there's a Whataburger. So we go through Whataburger, and we order him a cheeseburger and a Pepsi, and he has no money. And so he uses my $10 to pay for the Whataburger because he said this manager had the money. So I take him and drop him off there, and he offers to put me on the guest list, and I should have gone, but I didn't. I only had heard that one song. I didn't know.
Yeah.
So obviously the dance did well for him, and he goes on. And then fast forward many years, and he's playing at the Alamo Dome.
Oh, and that's a little jump there.
So I go. I get invited, and there's a big press conference. And so there's about 15 of us in this big room, and he comes in, and he was still married to Sandy, but Trisha was opening for him, and you could just tell that they really were in love.
Them was in love.
Yes. So we all get to ask a question, and it came my turn. I said, hey, I said, I know you don't remember me, but I saw you in Victoria at a Walmart, and you told me that you hoped the dance, you know, would do something for you. I said, did it? And he stopped, and he goes, that guy took me to Whataburger.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, and I think I owe him some money. I thought, that's a true...
That's so awesome. You're like, but, you know, you can't buy anything for $10 at Whataburger anymore.
And the other story that's fun is I went to see... I used to be friends with this country singer named Mark Colley.
Oh, right.
And
I know Mark Colley. I mean, I know of Mark Colley.
So he would come to Victoria a lot. So he was playing at the amphitheater in San Antonio, and it was Mark Colley, Kenny Chesney, and Tim McGraw. So I went to see Mark, and I went backstage, and Mark is diabetic, so we were catering to get food, and there was these DJs over in the corner, and they had this little girl on a stool, and she was playing songs for them, and she had this huge guitar, and she's playing some songs, and when she finished playing, they walked by, and one of them said, man, I hope somebody tells that little girl she can't sing. And it was Taylor Swift. And I thought, well,
yeah,
think about it today.
Like, yeah,
so,
now she's ruling the world, my girl. We love her.
Those are fun. But, you know, I got to meet artists, Toby Keith, Shania Twain. A lot of those artists would come through on promotional record tours back in the 80s and 90s, and nobody knew them. Because everybody starts somewhere.
Right.
And... I remember seeing Kenny Chesney at a KC Hall, and maybe 80 people were there. And he had hair longer than me at the time. He had really long hair, and he put out his first record. This was in 94. And now look at
him. Before his islands.
Yeah. But he wasn't doing all the island-y stuff then. Mm. He was more traditional country back then. But, you know, but today you could be in the right place, and you know people now that are coming out, like, I hear people all the time saying that they know Chris Stapleton from the early days of writing in Nashville. I did a story on Seth James the other day, and that was one of his writing partners when he went to Nashville.
Was Stapleton.
And Stapleton was just a staff writer.
Right. But so, yeah. Unbelievable. You kind of never know who's going
to
do
you
what.
You never know. So it's like, yeah, you get to meet some of these people, but you just were in the right place at the right time. It
totally
wasn't like anything special at the time, because you didn't know if that Garth Brooks was going to be Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks, yeah.
You know, he could have not been, you know, so.
I was eating breakfast with my old booking agent, Joey Lee, at William Morris, and he said, hey, that's your lawyer over there. We had just gotten my Sony publishing deal, and I'd never met my lawyer, Jess Rosen, and so he's like, well, let's go meet him. So we walked over there, and I said, hey, Jess, and then he introduced me to the other person at the table, and I was like, nice to meet you, and Bree, whatever. We leave, and we go sit back down, and he was like, wow, you really kept your cool with Kenny Chesney. I didn't know that the other guy was having, and I was all starstruck by my lawyer, and I was like,
right,
there's Kenny Chesney, whoops, you know, whatever.
But you never know. I mean,
yeah.
You don't, and those people are just
people.
Normal people,
yeah.
and they just either got a really good break, or they were talented, or both, and
luck, timing, money. I wish they were giving out record deals like they used to, but they.
You know, that's an interesting thing.
Interesting.
There was a Gene Simmons from Kiss the other day was saying something like, "It's hard for bands nowadays to make it because record labels treat them differently than they did back in the day."
Yeah. Or you have to have, I mean, the girl that I was talking to recently about this, she's really great. She's a star. She already has management. She already has a record done. And then they go to the record label with, like, here's our team and here's our album. Right. It's so backwards from what it used to be, which was like, take the artist, and now it's like the artist has to come with you with almost a complete package.
Right.
It's so strange. And I really want to thank you for supporting Texas music and all genres of music and dogs and New Braunfels in general. You're a gem here. We were talking about Mattson being so great for the town, and you're so great for the town, and we should continue to find ways to keep people away from, I'm just kidding, to keep our town special, because it is so special.
It is a special, especially the music scene. There's not many places that I know of personally that is this strong of a music scene. I mean, you may know of some that you travel around, but I know Memphis is pretty strong. They have a pretty good scene. I know obviously Nashville does, and but for the town our size to have this many musicians here.
Oh, good ones. I mean, I know places that have music all the time. I mean, I was just in Key West and everyone's playing music all the time. But to have this many really
good ones.
Yes, good singers, good places.
You're right. I mean, there's a difference between a musician and a good
right. So. Yes. And shout out to Moonshine Drinkery in Victoria. Have you been there yet?
I have not.
And just they're bringing some music to the people down in Victoria. They're my friends there, but thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks.
We got to catch up over coffee.
Where's Paul at today?
He's building our house. We're building our house with our own two hands and some nail guns. So he's doing that. I have a Zoom at 4, and then I'm going over there to work on the house till the sun goes down.
But he's a guitar player. He shouldn't be doing stuff with his hands.
I know. He was on a ladder yesterday putting a ceiling up, and I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I busted him being bad.
We're talking to we're trying to get them at the theater to play a show. But
Wilder Blue?
Yeah, but they're booked pretty far out. I mean, they're busy right now. They're doing really well.
Luke
Combs. And Zane cut his hand, too. Is he okay?
What is that man doing by a generator fan?
Yeah, he was at the Redbird, and I think they had to bring another guitar player with him or something. But,
I'm actually off next weekend, and I was like, I would play with y'all, but I only know so many chords, and that band knows too many chords. I can't do it.
Great band.
Well, so he'll be okay. It was good news.
Thanks for inviting me over.
Thank you.
This is awesome. This is really cool.
Thanks. It's going well so far. I know how to empty the tanks. I know how the systems run.
Yeah.
I had to keep it from freezing the other night, so I stayed up all night with it. But I love it so far. So thanks for being. It's cool. The podcast is Only Vans, but now it's Only RVs. I don't know.
Yeah. How'd you come up with that name? Obviously, Only Fans. So you just.
Yeah, I thought it was my idea. Like everything an artist does, that's great. But I think it was my old tour manager, Jeff Allen. I think it was him that did it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks, Dale. Fun. You're awesome.
Thank you.